Let the record reflect that it is 3:30 p.m. Wednesday, March 13th, 2019. Present are Vice Chair Coghill, Senator Giesel, Senator Reinbold, Senator Kawasaki, and myself, Chairman Birch. Legislators in the audience, we have former Speaker of the House, John, back there. How are you doing there, John? See what else?
Stand up for you.
Oh, please, please do. Thanks, John. Let's see, please silence your cell phones. And see, we have one item on today's agenda. It's SB 70, an act repealing the Ocean Rangers program by the Senate Rules Committee at request of the governor. Before we begin, I'd like to note that we will be taking public testimony on this bill today, and in order to be mindful of committee members' schedules and the fact that there are other committee meetings this evening, the goal is to conclude public testimony by no later than 5:30. I ask those attending on testifying to please sign up before 4:30 p.m., and if by 5:30 or so we have not made it through the list of those who have signed up, we will continue public testimony another day, beginning with those who had already signed up prior to today's 4:30 cutoff. At this time, I'd like to invite Commissioner Bruni to come forward, put your name in the record. I don't know if you have any staff that we're going to participate at the same time, but you're welcome to proceed with your presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I appreciate the opportunity to today to speak in support of SB 70, an act repealing the Ocean Rangers program. The Ocean Ranger program was implemented as part of a ballot initiative that passed by a slim margin on August 22, 2006. When I took on the role of DEC commissioner, Governor Dunleavy tasked each of his commissioners to make Alaska open for business. To that end, I asked my team to identify overly burdensome regulations, ones that are inefficient at meeting DEC's mission of protecting human health and the environment, ones that may treat some industries inconsistently with other industries, and ones that are disproportionate with the risks posed. The Ocean Ranger program was top on the list because of its high relative cost to its value. Major industries in Alaska with air emissions, wastewater discharges, potential for significant oil spills, and solid waste disposal requirements are regulated via DEC authorizations that includes self-monitoring and reporting, and both announced and unannounced inspections by DEC. No other industry in the state is subjected to 24/7 on-site observers, despite other industries posing a potentially greater human health and environmental risk. In Alaska, there are no mining rangers, oil rangers, fish processing rangers, or timber rangers. Why should there be cruise ship ocean rangers? Today's large cruise ships that visit Alaska either don't discharge in Alaskan waters or have an advanced wastewater treatment system that intermittently discharges cleaner wastewater than most community-based wastewater treatment systems that discharge 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. As one example, the discharges that cruise ships have in Alaska waters can only contain 40 fecal coliform bacteria per one-third cup of water. Indeed, one wastewater treatment plant in one port community is permitted to discharge 1.5 million of the same fecal coliform bacteria per one-third cup of water. My department has sufficient latitude and authority to inspect any property or premises with suspected sources of pollution or contamination, or to ascertain compliance or noncompliance with the regulation. We do not need the statute establishing Ocean Rangers in order to do this. The Ocean Ranger program is funded by a $4 per lower berth fee, which results in approximately $4 million annually in Ocean Ranger receipts. This money is used to hire a contractor that employs predominantly out-of-state marine engineers. The number of observations that the Ocean Rangers have made in 11 years that actually led to state-issued notices of violation can be counted on my two hands. Six. To be clear, Ocean Rangers' presence on board do provide some deterrent value, but but the value to the state of Alaska is not commensurate with the money that is being spent, nor the risk posed. Indeed, if this program was funded entirely by general fund dollars, it would have been eliminated years ago. The argument has been made that since this doesn't have a positive impact on our state's coffers, we shouldn't be dealing with this bill. I wholeheartedly disagree with that sentiment. To show that we are open for business and encouraging new investment to our state, we must treat our industries firmly but fairly and be good stewards not only of our own money, but also of the cruise ship passengers who pay these fees and are significant contributors to Alaska's tourism industry. I would now like to invite, with your permission, Andrew Sayers-Fay, DEC's Director of Water, to go into specifics of the bill, and both of us will be available for questions following and throughout this presentation. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Welcome. Thank you, Andrew. If you could read your name into the record. Appreciate
it. Sure. Good afternoon. My name is Andrew Sayers-Fay. I'm the Director of the Division of Water for the Department of Environmental Conservation. So I'd like to start with just by echoing Commissioner Bruni's sentiment. So we've thought of this as being good stewards of other people's money, whether it's given to us by the state of Alaska or whether it's collected from cruise ship passengers. And so in looking at this program, it was identified as a non-essential program in the governor's amended budget, and that's primarily because it's very costly for its outcomes. There's about $3.8 million in a year in in Ocean Ranger fees. And as a comparison, I'll go into some details about some other industries, but our overall wastewater program that we permit through the Division of Water is about three times the cost, and it covers the entire state and all of these other industries that I'll speak to. And I think it's important at the start to recognize that we're talking about the Ocean Ranger program. We're not talking about the division's cruise ship program. So separate from this bill, I'll touch on it again later in the presentation, but there are other funds from cruise ships that are collected, and there are other staff who are dedicated to address and inspect and look at cruise ship issues and deal with compliance. So as was stated earlier, there's no other industry in the state of Alaska that's permitted that has 24/7 on-site observers. Most industries have some combination of self-monitoring, reporting to the results to the agency, or keeping copies of those records so that when they get inspected, they have to show documented evidence of training, sample collection, results they've received, things along that manner. And so for most other industries, for instance, the first bullet about wastewater discharges to land and water, and that can cover whether it's a domestic plant, it could be a large community, it could be a small community, it could be a rural village, it could be a part of another industry, say a work camp for an oil and gas activity when they have their domestic discharges. We also have industrial, which covers a lot of smaller industries and kind of a broad stretch, but the other larger ones are obviously the mining sector, oil and gas, seafood processing. And for all of these, their wastewater discharges are permitted by DC, and they have that combination of self-monitoring followed up by the agency going out to do inspections. And so under that program, which authorizes discharges under the Clean Water Act, we call it our Alaska Pollutant Discharge Elimination System, or APDS program, we typically aim for visiting each facility that's permitted at least once over 5 years. And so if it's a small facility, that might be a half-day inspection. If it's more complex, it could be 2 to 3 days. But that's sort of our level of coverage of when we're going out and looking for these records. There are some facilities that discharge very large volumes of water wastewater per day, and those major dischargers get inspected once every 2 years. So there's a very large difference between the frequency of coverage with cruise ship Ocean Rangers, where we cover about 65% of the voyages in Alaskan waters. There is a cruise ship ranger on for some portion of that trip. So obviously the rest of these are outside my division, but in a similar way, we regulate air emissions. There's both mobile and stationary facilities that are permitted. They have monitoring requirements. They get periodic inspections, and for all of these, those can be either announced or unannounced. Hazardous waste handling and solid waste facilities are another category that falls under that. And then they're obviously a bit different in terms of how we approach them, but food establishments looking for direct human health protection, tattoo parlors, pools, spas, and other sanitation issues. So to tell you a little bit more, as I mentioned before, this is the slide that has some of the details. So in the Division of Water, separate from the Ocean Ranger program, there is a cruise ship program. And so there's about $750,000 a year of fees that are collected to run that program. That includes a large wastewater discharge permit. And for smaller vessels, it's a best management practices. And for both, they're providing plans and information on how they handle wastewater, solid waste, and a couple of other areas of issues. And so we have four department staff who do this. It starts with registering cruise ships and reviewing those submittals. And those submittals also include how they're going to actually collect the samples so that we can see that they're representative. So I'm on the first sub-bullet. And then, as I mentioned on the second sub-bullet, we author wastewater discharger authorizations under this large cruise ship permit. And we conduct inspections. We do compliance assistance initially if necessary. We issue notices of violation, which can either stop there where there's corrective actions that a cruise line might take, or they may proceed to actually formal enforcement with fines that are assessed. And we interact with the Department of Law in order to initiate those enforcement actions and fines. So in addition to the department staff, that series of funding also funds a contract we have to have people look at the opacity, the smoke coming out of cruise ships, to distinguish between what is steam and what exceeds our air quality standards. And so part of the reason why we do that by contract is we want to have folks in multiple locations in the state. So Ketchikan, Skagway, Juneau are the typical places, but they will also do some observations during the summer in places like Seward or Whittier.
We'll get a question here.
Sure.
Senator Bishop.
Thank you. On the opacity monitoring, you hire a contractor to do that?
Yes, as part of this, separate from the Ocean Ranger funds, yes.
Okay, just bear with me for a minute if I can have a little bit of latitude, Mr. Chairman. So do you still do opacity testing for asphalt plant operators?
That's the Division of Air. So the cruise ship program we've centralized in the Division of Water, and that covers both the air and the water issues. So for an asphalt plant, that would be regulated under our Division of Air. And so I know that they have limits in terms of you have to be a large enough facility, and I would assume that an asphalt plant would exceed that.
The reason I'm going with the line of questioning is used to be when I was in the industry, annually you could go down and get your opacity testing certificate for a contractor, right? So you can read your smoke out of your stack.
Right.
But do you still do that? I'm going to come to a conclusion a little further along in the presentation here, but I just want to know that right now.
Okay. So through the chair, I can't answer directly all the ways that you can get your certification. But we do have annual training for the staff in the Division of Water and for the contractors that we use for that opacity monitor training each year.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much. Before we roll forward, I want to note that we've been joined at 3:32 by Senator Keel and Senator Bishop. And I also want to note if there's a sign-up sheet outside the door if anybody would be interested in signing up to testify. Okay with that. Go ahead, Andrew.
Thank you. So as we alluded to in the beginning, the program and the department looked at the question of what do we get for the investment in the Ocean Ranger program. And so it's about $3.8 million a year. And so typically we report through the Office of Management and Budget the number of potential compliance issues that Ocean Rangers identify. And they have a pretty broad authority, which we'll get into in a moment on the second bullet. But so what we looked for a little more thoroughly this year was saying, well, how many of those actually end up becoming non-compliance? And it's not a one-to-one relationship. There may not be enough information collected by the Ocean Ranger. It may not be under the authority of the Department of Environmental Conservation. Or the issue is actually resolved very quickly, and there's no need to move to a notice of violation, which is the first step on formal enforcement. So as I said, Ocean Rangers, they're looking for potential noncompliance across a very broad set of authorities that are state and federal. It pertains to marine discharges and the pollution requirements associated with that. They're ensuring that passengers, crews, and residents at the ports are protected from improper sanitation, health, and safety practices. And so they are not experts in all these areas. They are looking at bilge water. They are looking at fuel handling practices. They are looking at air emissions. They're looking at wastewater discharges, whether sewage, gray water, or pools or spas who are chlorinated and accidentally discharged overboard. They are looking at some of the food preparation practices. They are looking at hazardous materials, batteries, things that are moved on and off the ship. They are looking at solid waste. It's a very broad area. So they identify many things that to them look like they may be an issue, and then the department staff follow up on whether that actually is. So as it turns out on the third bullet, that most issues identified by Ocean Rangers on those daily reports do not turn out to be formal violations. And so what we've got, I will get into the table in a moment, but the final bullet kind of really captures it, is that over the 11 years of the program, we've identified 6 notices of violation that are directly attributable to observations made by Ocean Rangers. And so that would leave that the remaining 238 notices of violation that have been issued by the department over that same period either have to do with staff inspections, responding to complaints, doing periodic opacity monitoring, or following up on observations that were initially made by contractors doing opacity monitoring. So the table to the right just gives you a little bit more detail on that, showing you that on average we have less than 1 formal NOV that's issued that's associated by Ocean Rangers. We have many more in the wastewater field. That's where we have for large cruise ships, we have a permit. There's more explicit requirements. It's easier to identify whether they're in compliance or not, and they have self-monitoring that they have to report to us. And the air opacity we've talked a little bit about, we have monitoring for that. And then other is kind of a large category of other things that they're looking at.
Mr. Chair. Oh, excuse me. Thank you.
Just really briefly, in this slide it talks about potential noncompliance with state and federal authorities. And so absent Ocean Rangers, you're basically saying that the department would be able to assume those roles as far as the federal regulations goes.
Through the chair, Senator Kawasaki, there are some recent changes in what are the federal regulations, so that gets complicated. But as a general matter, what we're intending to show is that most of our notices of violation or formal enforcement action actually doesn't come from the Ocean Ranger. And so if we maintain the program the activities that our cruise ship staff do now without any changes, we would expect to have a similar level of observation of these issues. What we would intend to do if the Ocean Ranger program were to go away, right now, one staff member spends a significant amount of time each summer combing through the daily reports, interacting with the contractor, and so they would have more time on their hands, and so we would be able to think about how we target them to do additional on-ship inspections.
Thanks.
Okay, thank you. Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just Mr. Sarasvay, to that point, couldn't you free up the same time by computerizing the reports?
Through the chair, Senator Keel, we have done a lot over the years. It's been an evolving program where every year we kind of ask ourselves the questions of what have we learned from the prior season and what questions do we have that have come up. If we've had a lot of complaints or we've had a lot of reports on certain issues, we may choose to make that a focus area. And so we have over time been moving to make things as electronic as possible in terms of the forms that Ocean Rangers fill out and how they get emailed to the department. So we don't have a system where it's completely automated, but we're sort of in process on that.
Thank you. Thank
you. Proceed.
So some background. So the Ocean Ranger program came about, as was mentioned earlier, because there was a ballot initiative. And so what this bill, Senate Bill 70, would do is it would repeal the program, specifically the statutory requirement in AS 4603-476 that says we will have an Ocean Ranger, a licensed marine engineer, on all ships that enter Alaskan waters. And so for ships that are in innocent passage, there's an exception for them. And in terms of the number of voyages and the number of large cruise ships we have, it's difficult to have an Ocean Ranger on the ship at all times. And so what we end up doing is covering every ship at some point when it's in Alaska, and in general about 65% of the voyages of any ship that is in Alaska has coverage. The bill would also repeal the funding for that, which is the $4 per lower berth fee, which is paid by cruise ship passengers when they're booking their tickets. And so it's something that is typically, we call it below the line because it is a separate fee that is charged by the cruise ship. It is there's a whole category of port fees. The Port of Seattle charges about $16 to $17 per passenger. each when you board and when you disembark, so there's about $33 there. And so all these fees add up, and for a typical voyage to Alaska, they can be in approximately $150 per person. This bill, as I mentioned a couple times, was originally part of a ballot initiative, and what I wanted to emphasize about that is that the funding is separate from other aspects of that initiative, which created a head tax that is separate from the Ocean Ranger fee. Also, there were changes to our statutory authority, which I'll highlight in the next couple of slides, that this bill does not roll back. We were granted some additional authority in terms of data collection in dealing with cruise ships, and so none of that has changed. The only portion of the bill, the only portion of the program that the bill addresses is not having the Ocean Rangers and then repealing the fee for that.
Senator Giesel?
Sure. Just for clarification, AS 4603-480D,
correct,
repeals only the fee that goes to the Ocean Rangers. That fee doesn't pay for any other aspect of taxes that the cruise ship passengers pay or other monitoring functions.
So in our statutes, 4603-480 covers the entire set of fees that the department receives. And so we have a separate fee called our commercial passenger vessel environmental compliance fee. And so that is the other categories, 480 A through C, and then also an E. And so those are unaffected. And so that's the additional funding that the department is using when I talked about the other four staff members in the Division of Water who are looking at cruise ships and monitoring them and performing inspections.
Thank you for the clarification. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Proceed.
Sure. So in summary on this slide, the cruise ship Ocean Ranger program is not required by the state constitution or federal law. It is conducted by a contractor that we have paid for at an annual cost of about $3.8 million per year. And primarily, those are out-of-state marine license engineers. In any given year, it varies. We may have 2 to 4 Alaskans who are employed in this activity. And at most, that usually represents 20% of the total of the Ocean Rangers. So I mentioned statutory authorities. So the department, I think maybe we could start with the first one. It talks about how the types of pollution that are prohibited. So obviously, in the Department of Environmental Conservation, that covers a large breadth. It's a person may not pollute or add to the pollution on air, land, subsurface land, or water of the state. And so in order to act on that authority, there's several other sub-authorities. I think the next one below in 4603-20 is particularly relevant because the Ocean Rangers have functioned as providing a level of inspection. And so the department still retains authority at reasonable times to enter and inspect with the consent of the owner any property or premise that we're regulating. And we have in other examples historically when we have asked for access to a permitted facility at what we consider to be reasonable times and have not been granted that. When we can demonstrate that, you know, if needed, we go to the courts and obtain a warrant in order to perform that inspection. So the third bullet is kind of showing you that separate from the Ocean Rangers, the cruise ship program in the Division of Water, this commercial passenger vessel environmental compliance program, you probably know why I call it the cruise ship program now, it's a mouthful. There's a range of authorities separate from the one that's being repealed, the 476. So this sets up the requirement that we have for large cruise ships, a wastewater permit. It sets up some of the monitoring standards, whether or not they can have mixing zones and under what conditions, and other activities of the department in order to regulate cruise ships. So the next couple of bullets, I won't get into all of them, but the next, they relate to our sort of general authority on regulating water, wastewater, setting pollution standards, having authority to do criminal or civil inspections, enforcements, to determine liability and the obligation that someone has in terms of what they can be charged to remediate a situation, to address oil spill prevention preparedness and response. It's obviously of interest to the state at large with the amount of oil that's shipped from Valdez, so there's quite a bit there. And then our authorities for air quality.
Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Under 020, the powers of the department, I'm just trying to figure out what Ocean Rangers do while they're on board. Do Ocean Rangers have that same ability, or do they do more than in regulation than is what's stated here that the department can do?
Through the chair, Senator Kawasaki. I would say the main difference is that staff members are credentialed inspectors and enforcement officers of the department, and they go through a training program to have those credentials. And so when they're on board, in contrast to an ocean ranger, they're both there, they have a presence, they have an ability to have access, and they're both making observations. But it's a difference in training, and it's a difference in being able to be called into court to back up if you were to issue a notice of violation, if it were to be contested and you're having some sort of discussion about that. You could obviously, if you could get a hold of an ocean ranger and pull them into court, you could discuss them, but you don't have the same level of authority as you do with a staff member who's been credentialed in those activities.
Follow-up. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So when you're, I expect you're talking about when you're at port is when most of these inspections occur, but what happens in between ports? Would an inspector be there riding with as an ocean ranger would doing the inspection during that time?
Senator Kawasaki, through the chair, at this time with the ocean ranger program, staff members are not riding on the cruise ships between ports. So when they're doing inspection, it's onshore when the vessel is docked. There would be the potential to have the conversation about what availability. We would not obviously have the same coverage as an ocean ranger. And when an ocean ranger is on board, they have a certain amount of paperwork and mandatory requirements, and then they have a certain amount of time when they're actually doing inspections, and then a portion that they're sleeping. So that's there is a difference in coverage between ports and in terms of the amount of time that's spent.
So just to clarify, I guess what I'm hearing is that right now the ocean rangers, they're on board, they're there, whether we're at port or not or at sea, they're there. They're doing inspections, they're monitoring for compliance of state regulations, and so if we end the program, we won't have somebody that's permanently on board during those periods of time. Is that correct?
Senator Kawasaki, through the chair. Yes, that's correct. Now the cruise ships would end up being regulated like all the other industries where we don't have that 24/7 presence of someone physically there in the facility at all times.
Thank you.
Senator Bishop?
I'd like a clarification. A couple pages back, I thought you said that we only had 65% of the coverage at any one time on the cruise ships with the ocean rangers.
Senator Bishop, through the chair. Yes, I can expand on that. So, there's about 34 large cruise ships in any given year that are coming back and forth through Alaskan waters. And so they make multiple trips in any given year. And so every cruise ship that is making those multiple trips will have an ocean ranger on board multiple times during a cruise ship season. But of the number of trips that a given ship takes, approximately 18 to 20, perhaps more like, that's where the 65% figure comes in. So I'm not doing my math in my head, but let's just say 13 to 15 of the voyages, you would have an ocean ranger on board, and 18, the other, whatever the math works out there, 5 to 6 times, you would not have an ocean ranger on board.
So then we don't have 100% coverage.
No, we don't have 100% coverage. What we have is when an ocean ranger is present, he is present. When we say 24/7, what we're referring to is when the ocean ranger is present.
Okay. I just want to get that clear.
Sure.
Eric Hill.
Thank you. Mr. Sarasvay, you were talking about enforceability. So when I look down the list of things on an ocean ranger's checklist, an ocean ranger spots a violation going on out at sea. Are you saying we can't issue a notice of violation because they don't have the enforcement authority?
So through the chair, Senator Keel, they can't submit a report that automatically turns into a notice of violation. A staff member has to become involved, has to review the report, ask questions of the ocean ranger if necessary, gather additional information from the cruise ship, and then based on that, it is the staff member who's writing up the notice of violation. So they can initiate the activity, but an ocean ranger can.
And just to follow up, so is that effective?
Senator Keel, through the chair, can you repeat the question? I'm not sure what aspect of effectiveness?
You described a process, Mr. Chair, if I may. You described a process then if an ocean ranger finds a violation while underway out at sea in Alaska waters. Does that process work?
So, Senator Keel, through the chair, I'll answer that two ways. So, first, I think the most direct way, perhaps this is the way you're asking it. It's as effective as we can be if we're, you know, otherwise, to make it more effective, we would have to essentially deputize the Ocean Rangers. We'd have to confer the authority that the department and the department staff have onto an Ocean Ranger. I think the whole argument of this, of our support for this bill, is that that's not an effective way to regulate in terms of it's a very costly way to regulate to have an Ocean Ranger involved. And the level of coverage that the Ocean Rangers provide is far in excess of any other industry, and there's an appropriate deterrence and regulation of other industries without that level.
Just to follow up, so how does that vary from other situations? I think you said some of the opacity reading was done by contractors. Did I understand that right?
Correct.
Same issue there?
So, Senator Keel, through the chair. So, for our opacity readers, they go through the same training as the staff does in terms of being able to properly read opacity through EPA's Method 9. But they are still providing what we call readings of interest. And so those are still double-checked by a staff member before they would move on to being considered something worthy of a formal notice of violation. Because we are going through the training side-by-side with them, there's a much greater comfort and an understanding. We're filling out the same forms. We are occasionally, during the season, taking readings side-by-side as sort of a quality check on the contractors. So there's less work for a staff member to do for a valid reading to become a notice of violation with an opacity reading.
Thank you.
Thank you. I think we're ready to roll.
So the prior slide had the details on some of the authorities that the department has that are relevant to the cruise ship industry that we were regulating absent the Ocean Ranger program. And so this is just kind of putting that in summary. So if this Senate Bill 70 were to pass and repeal the Ocean Ranger program, department staff would still have authority to conduct inspections at reasonable times. They could obtain a warrant if that was necessary if they were denied reasonable access. There is no change in the standard of what is legal or illegal as a result of this bill. All the same regulations would apply. There is no change in the enforcement or the emergency authority because those are primarily activities of the department. Those were not activities of the Ocean Rangers. There is no change to the large cruise ship wastewater discharge permit. There would not be a change to the small cruise ship and the ferry best management plan requirements, and it doesn't change the obligations they have for sampling and reporting requirements.
Mr. Chairman.
Excuse me. Senator Keel.
Thank you. A question maybe for the commissioner. So the bill doesn't change the discharge permit, doesn't change the discharge standards. You spent significant time on the difference between discharge standards for fixed points versus cruise ships. Was that an argument against mixing zones, or I'm confused why that came up.
Senator Keel, through the chair, I think the reason it was brought up just to show the disparity of the requirements for the cruise ship industry versus the host port communities that host the cruise ships. That was the reason for bringing it up. But the relevance to this bill is probably inappropriate. So thank you for that.
Thank you. Senator Cargill?
The other question is, I remember when we first went down this road had to put the Rangers in, the equipment for some of these cruise ships was in the process of being upgraded. Where are we at in that?
Senator Coghill, through the chair. Yes, you're correct. In 2001, there was a federal bill that changed the requirements for the cruise ship. So, and it was a phased-in process for the ships. There was if your keel was laid before a certain date, you had different requirements. I can confirm with staff, but it's my understanding that all of the ships now operating in Alaska that are discharging are using advanced wastewater treatment systems. There are some ships that have the holding capacity regardless of what kind of equipment they have on board, such that they don't discharge in Alaskan waters, because if they did, they'd have to be in compliance with our permit and take various samples and have additional requirements.
Follow up?
They still have the ability to do high seas mixing, right?
Senator Coghill, through the chair, do you mean mixing or discharge?
Discharge outside of Alaska waters, yeah.
Yes, Senator Coghill. All the ships that we regulate, we are regulating under the state authority, 3 nautical miles from shore, plus as a result of that federal bill, has specific language to address donut hills, where in southeast in the Alexander Archipelago, you could be more than 3 miles from shore, but still be in southeast. And so within that area, the entire Alexander Archipelago and anywhere in Alaska, when you're up to 3 miles from shore, that's the coverage of the permit.
So, Mr. Chairman, how many ships venture outside of the archipelago?
Senator Coghill, through the chair, obviously a lot of the ships start out in Seattle, or they start out in Vancouver, and so a portion of their travel is outside of Alaskan waters. The vast majority of the ships are operating such that once they enter Alaskan waters, they stay in Alaskan waters until they leave. There are some, either because of their transversing across the Gulf of Alaska or in some other situations where when they're visiting Sitka, where there may be a portion of the time where they're outside of 3 miles.
Okay, thank you.
So we're good to go?
I have a question.
Senator Kawasaki.
Thank you. I don't think it pertains necessarily to this slide, but can you tell me just technically, there was a slide earlier about the six actual violations that occurred. Can you tell me, from your website, there's a number of findings, and I don't know, they're not necessarily violations per se, but they're something that was discovered. You know, for instance, 74 oil pollution incidents last year, 87 the year before that, 19 wastewater incidents last year, 22 the year before that. I'm just curious how many of these incidents that Ocean Rangers find actually go all the way to the level where they become an actual violation.
So through the chair, Senator Kawasaki, I think what you're referring to is we often have that information that we report to OMB, and it has that kind of stacked bar chart where we have those categories, as you said, safety, petroleum, air quality, water quality, different things that Ocean Rangers are finding potential non-compliance items. And so over the life of the program from 2008 through 2018, there have only been six notice of violations that are directly attributable and only attributable to the Ocean Rangers. And so I have a little bit of information on that. It may have been an oil sheen report. It may have been an offloading wastewater where there was a spill. It may have been that a sampling plan wasn't followed or an unauthorized discharge. So those are some of the items in the six that we're talking about that have been identified over those 11 years.
Follow up. So just how many of those incidents that are discovered by an Ocean Ranger, because you mentioned that there were only six that were exclusively from Ocean Rangers, but an Ocean Ranger might find something, I guess, that, you know, when they stop at next port, maybe something that DEC here needs to identify. How many times does that happen?
So, Senator Kawasaki, through the chair, I'm just shuffling to see if I happen to have an email from our program manager for the cruise ship program that he gave me earlier today. I don't have it in front of me. But I asked that question of, you know, can I have some more detail on how the program self-identifies what notices of violation are attributable to the Ocean Ranger? And so I don't have the exact language in front of me. But essentially what he said was they make that determination when – you obviously end up in a notice of violation, and when the Ocean Ranger's report is what instigates the department's investigation. So if a staff member instigates it, or if it comes from an opacity contractor that instigates it, or if it is something that the ship is self-reporting, because there are requirements that if they are not in compliance with the permit, depending on the severity of the activity, they have a varying range of time in order to notify the department. So if it's not identified by those other people initially, if it's identified by an Ocean Ranger initially, that's how we're determining those six.
So I'm just trying to figure out the total number. So there could be Ocean Rangers that are identifying an issue. The staff person here in Juneau decides that must be something that they're going to have to look at, and then they come on board and help and qualify the inspection? Essentially, is that what happens?
Well, Senator Kawasaki, through the chair, yes. If an Ocean Ranger initiated an activity and whatever follow-up occurs and it results in a notice of violation, that would become one of these what we call six notices of violation that are attributable to Ocean Rangers. Because of the nature of a notice of violation and because that's the formal enforcement step, there is never a situation where only on the basis of the Ocean Ranger report does it go automatically to a notice of violation. So there's always staff involvement, but if it started because of an Ocean Ranger, that's what gets attributed to them.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Are there workload issues or are there adjustment issues with departmental staff when they get these Ocean Rangers reports? When there are irregularities or potential violations, is the follow through by staff 100%? Is it adjusted down based on workload?
So through the chair, Senator Keel, by the end of the season or shortly thereafter, the coverage rate is 100%. But when those reports come in, you know, staff will flip through them, and the ones that seem most egregious, whether just because of flagrancy or whether it's issues with human health or the environment, they will obviously prioritize those first, and those will be the first ones that they'll start investigating. So if you have an issue about a small potential spill in an engine room, that's not going to get as much immediate interest as something that may or may not be an unauthorized discharge. So the response time will vary based on priority, but you know, all staff will follow up with everything. And so at the end of the season, there's still probably lower priority things that they're still following up for a couple weeks, you know, with the cruise lines and sort of closing those out.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. Proceed.
Just want to confirm that this was the last slide. So the previous slide before this was talking about, you know, what would be left in the cruise ship program, what was not going to be changed. And so this is just talking about that transition. So if Senate Bill 70 were to pass, this is what would happen in terms of a transition. Obviously, the cruise ship season goes across more than one fiscal year. And so the way the contract is set up is it gets funded by one fiscal year. So in this case, for this summer coming up, the state fiscal year, $2019 dollars. And that would provide the funding to operate throughout the summer season. So there would be no change in the Ocean Ranger activities this summer if this bill were to pass. If it were to pass and then the Ocean Ranger program were repealed, then as it turns out, the Ocean Ranger contract is up for renewal at the end of October of 2019. So there would not be a new contract issued. There would not be Ocean Rangers for the summer of 2020. And depending on whether the program has ended because of the bill passing and rescinding the authority for the fees or some other budgetary mechanism, if the fees might still be collected, but the program would end. Or sorry, I apologize. I sort of combined the last two bullets. If you'll give me a moment, I'll just repeat. So if the bill passes as is, the program would go away in summer of 2020, and the fee would go away. It would no longer be collected after July 1st of this year. If the budgetary authority is eliminated, perhaps through a governor's veto, but the statutory program has not yet been repealed, then the department, because the contract is otherwise ending at the end of October, that would not be renewed. The state would still be collecting the fee. The department wouldn't have the authority to actually spend the money. And then at some point, that issue would have to be resolved about not implementing the program but still collecting the fee.
That conclude your presentation?
Yes, sir.
Great. Thank you very much. Does anybody have, anyone on the panel have questions for Commissioner Bruni or Director Sayers-Faye? Senator Keel?
Mr. Chairman, it's a question to the fiscal notes, I guess, and there are three of them that reflect a fund change if this passes. About $421,000 coming out of the cruise environmental compliance account, which I think the roughly dollar ahead that precedes the citizen initiative. Is that fund $420,000 a year in surplus? And if so, what are we doing with the built-up money?
Chairman Birch, could I call Jeff Rogers, our administrative services director, to the...
Certainly. Yeah, just come forward, read your name into the record, please.
My name is Jeff Rogers. I'm the Admin Services Director for DEC. Senator Keel, through the chair, you're correct to some degree. We have not had in the cruise ship program in the Division of Water the amount of legislative authorization to spend that we have had in revenue. Our revenue numbers in recent years have varied, but they hover in the range of $3.5 million plus. And there's some timing issues that go with it because it spans a fiscal year for us. We estimate that in the current year and next year that we will actually receive more than $5 million in Ocean Ranger receipts. And that follows pretty naturally from the number of passengers that Juneau is expected to get times four. So the math is actually pretty straightforward. We have only had the 3.4 million plus in the Division of Water to operate the Ocean Ranger program. There is a couple hundred thousand dollars that supports administrative costs and overhead both in the Division of Water and for centralized services that associate to the Ocean Ranger program, as with all of our other funding sources. And the legislature made a decision 2 years ago to fund the fish tissue monitoring program at the Environmental Health Lab with receipts from the Ocean Ranger program. That was a decision that the legislature made. The department followed suit. Obviously, we see value in the fish tissue monitoring program, so we've continued it with that fund source. So we do spend funds that were appropriated to us by the legislature on something other than the Ocean Ranger program.
So, Mr. Chairman, the question was the replacement fund source.
So, okay, yes, thank you, Senator Keel, through the chair. So we have proposed to replace that, what you're absolutely correct, $420,800 that is currently funded by Ocean Ranger receipts with commercial passenger vessel environmental compliance, CPVEC is our term of art fees. There is a fund balance that we project to be sufficient for a number of years into the future to continue that. It's something the department will need to continue to manage, whether CPVEC can afford to keep paying for all of those operations. But yes, it continues to fund the administrative and overhead costs that associate to the cruise ship program generally, and the fish tissue monitoring program at the Environmental Health Lab.
Okay, I'll ask follow-up questions offline. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions? Seeing none, thank you very much. One question that comes to mind is with the modernization of the, we talked a little bit about the technology changes and with the idea of doing a better job with fewer resources, is there technology available now that, that you can speak to that might either supplement or assist and support the kind of the monitoring that the program has provided in the past?
So, Chairman Birch, I think having our program manager for the program could give you the details if you want all the gory details. But I would, as a general statement, I would say yes. There has been a change in technology. There's miniaturization. There's better access to have things that are remote. And so there are opportunities to consider about adding functionality of monitoring where the reporting is either automatic or it's continuous and then downloaded at some point and shared with the department so that there's a greater breadth of information that could be received.
Great.
Just a really quick question on that.
Senator Kalsak.
Yeah, and just a really quick question on that. Do under the page, do we currently have statutory authority to do that kind of monitoring if we were to, miniaturize and do remote? Is there statutory authority already existing in state law?
So through the chair, Senator Kawasaki, our authority to do so would be our overall objective of, for say a wastewater discharge permit, it's what is the water quality of the body, what is the quality of the effluent, what concerns do we have, what risks are presented. And so if we have up to this point wanted to have greater monitoring but have been hindered by imposing that cost on the regulated community and by using something that's remote or automated, and then we can now reasonably require that and have a greater collection of information, that's typically how it would be done. If we just wanted to say, let's automate as much as we can, I think any regulated industry would ask sort of at what cost and for what purpose.
Okay. Thank you.
Great. Well, thank you very much for your presentation this afternoon, Senator Keel.
If we repeal the fee, at whose cost would we do what you and Senator Kawasaki just described? Passenger or the ship owner?
So through the chair, Senator Keel, so we would be using, as if I can use the abbreviation that we used, the CPVEC funds would be the source for the cruise ship program, absent the Ocean Ranger, and those would be our source of funds for our program activities for developing permits, issuing the permits, investigating questions like, whether or not there's an opportunity for automation.
That's the fund, Mr. Rogers said we'd have to watch very carefully to see if we could sustain. So, thank you.
Great. Well, thank you very much for your presentation this afternoon. And before we move on to public testimony, I would again ask folks to sign up before 4:30 with the aim of concluding our testimony by 5:30 or so. If we have any additional testifiers, we'll have to continue public testimony another day, beginning with those who have signed up prior to 4:30 today. I'd also note that we have a two-minute time limit per testifier today, so I ask everyone to keep your comments concise. Additional comments can be submitted in writing at any time by emailing the committee at senate.resources@akledge.gov. With that, we'll go ahead and open public testimony. And we'll see if we have anybody in the room that would like to testify. See, first to sign up, we have Joseph Geldof, Douglas. Put your name into the record.
My name is Joe Geldof. I live in West Juneau, which is different than Douglas. I'm glad to be here, and my 2 minutes I'll try to be brief. And let me first say, I've had interesting discussions with Commissioner Bruni and staff. I also was summoned into the Chief of Staff's office for the governor to talk about this piece of legislation. And so why me? My involvement in the cruise ship industry goes back to 1999, and at one point, then-President Drew Pierce directed me to come into her office, and I worked for you all, for this body, on taxation issues. So my involvement on taxation and some of these issues, there was a special session, what was that, 2000 or 2001. It's fairly good, but enough about me. My discussions with Commissioner Bruni, I said, you know, this is sort of an ideological approach to something that's not an overwhelming problem. Why do I say that? I don't think the industry asked for this repeal. The gathering of the $4 to put onboard observers on these large passenger vessels, essentially vessels with 4,000 or 5,000, 6,000 people, came about because the industry earned the scrutiny. If there were historic practices in there, and there were, and they were horrendous in terms of pollution in our waters, that got the attention of then the U.S. Senator Frank Murkowski on the donut holes, various people in the legislature, the industry really earned the scrutiny. If I have a central point, it's that what was adopted, and the commissioner said narrowly, it wasn't that narrow. It was like close to 6,000 people, more in favor of those who weren't against it in the initiative back in 2006. And my experience with narrow elections is really narrow, like a coin flip, because I was counsel of record in Speaker Edgman's case. I mean, that's a narrow race. When you win by 5,000 in Alaska, that's not so narrow. But I think what we need is not to repeal the bill. What we need to do is reconfigure the bill in a manner that works and makes sense both for the industry, the citizens of Alaska. A couple other points, because I'm probably over time.
That does conclude your time.
Okay.
If you could wrap up.
Okay. The perception that this was some idea floated by the environmental community is actually wrong. The idea of putting an onboard observer was a direct outgrowth of much discussions with the fishing community, who are used to having onboard observers in the federal fisheries. The industry earned the scrutiny. It's time to reevaluate the program, but not just repeal it. We can reprogram the funds. We can probably be more efficient. There is electronic monitoring. And I'll just end by saying, I don't think there's any appetite among your colleagues in the Senate Finance, or not significant, or in the other chamber, to just repeal this. What you need to do is get a committee substitute that's been scrutinized by the industry, by people who have been involved with this, and the administration, that will come up with a workable program to make sure these large floating cities operate efficiently and successfully, but they don't pollute.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Geldof. Next, we have signed up to Rob Arnold.
Well, if there's no questions, I will.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Good afternoon, Chairman Birch, through the chair to the members. Good afternoon as well. My name is Rob Arnold. I live in the Valley. I'm a registered voter, and I'm an Alaskan. Now, I have a house in Ketchikan, and my wife has a cabin in, near Kasan in Cole Bay. And we go down there and recreate in the summertime. My big concern is this past summer that there were several warnings. We go out to Settlers Cove, and we go recreate, we go camping, and then we go to Buggy's Beach sometime and go swimming. Now, there were several different incidents in Ketchikan where there was excessive fecal in the water, and we weren't allowed to go swimming. They suggested not to go swimming. This is very concerning to me. I don't think that this program is I'm against repealing the Ocean Ranger program. Six violations, that's enough for a program to be successful. It's a small price to pay for independent monitoring. It's no cost to the state. I don't think everybody says that enough. We're going to have 160,000 more tourists coming to Alaska this year. So how much is that worth to pay for this small amount? The other thing that concerns me is that, from my understanding, there were four permits issued for discharging at the dock. And this is very concerning to me because nowhere in the world do they allow discharging at the dock. And from what I've what I understand, only in Alaska this happens. So I'm very concerned about that for the fish and the water and for people, Alaskans. I know that they hire these people from Crowley. That's, there's Alaskans that work on these jobs. So, and if you don't, you know, 65% is missing from this. So what we need to do is we should raise the fees a little bit and hire more Alaskan rangers to go out to all these ships that we're missing. And to have Alaskans who have Alaskans' best interest in mind. So thank you for your time, and please don't get rid of this program. We need it in Ketchikan. We need it in Juneau. There were some air quality problems this summer, and I'm sure you guys read the news. So thanks for giving me this time.
Thank you, Mr. Arnold. Next, we have Linda Gigera. Gigera. My apologies. Gigera. Thank you.
My bane.
Put your name in the record.
Thank you. 2 minutes. For the record, my name is Linda Jaguar. I live in Douglas, Alaska, and I do echo what the other speakers here have said, that to throw this program out doesn't make any sense to me at all. You've got $3.8 million coming in. You've got a cadre of workers who know what they're doing on these vessels. The fact that there are a few NOVs tells me that it's working, not that it's not necessary, that active regulatory oversight works. And I think that's very important. We've got 1.8 million more, or up to 1.3 million visitors we're expecting this year on cruise ships alone. And I think they do warrant greater, not less, regulatory oversight based on past infractions. So we've got a good thing going. Let's keep it going. And that's all I have to say.
Thank you very much for your testimony this afternoon, Linda. Next, we have Heather Evoy. Give us your name for the record.
Emasa Heather Evoy Dewayu, Simshianu, Lakshkik de Hokshku. Ketch Canada Metlakatla Diwa Watku at a Juno Diwa Tsogu. Good afternoon. My name is Heather Evoy. I'm Simshian from the Eagle Clan. I come from Ketchikan and Metlakatla, but I live here in Juno. And I am here today representing the concerns of SEAC, Southeast Alaska Conservation Council. SEAC strongly urges the Senate Resource Committee to keep the Ocean Rangers program intact. Cutting this program has no benefit and only does harm to the safety, health, and well-being of Alaskan residents, ecosystems, and the economy. This program is an effective monitoring and enforcement mechanism in Alaska to ensure cruise ships aren't damaging our waterways. There is no financial cost to the state, but it provides a much-needed service to protect our collective waters, economies, and communities. Alaska is the first and only state to require the U.S. Coast Guard licensed marine engineers to be on board vessels to act as independent observers for the purpose of monitoring compliance with state and federal requirements pertaining to marine discharge and pollution. Ocean Rangers also check that passengers and crew are protected from improper sanitation, health, and safety practices. To pay for this program, ballot measure 2 included a $4 per berth Ocean Ranger fee. Revenues of this fee are estimated to be approximately $4.1 million per year. During 2018 alone, Ocean Rangers filed 1,580 daily reports and were on board during 66% of the days the ships were in Alaskan waters. They reported 189 alleged noncompliant incidences, and an increase from 184 incidents in 2017. Just if I can end really quickly on my own personal note, as the Indigenous Engagement Lead at SEAC, I travel all throughout Southeast Alaska throughout the year. Like I said, I'm from Ketchikan and Metlakatla, and there has been increased concern that I have heard throughout all of the Southeast communities regarding increased cruise vessel traffic and the waste that comes from them. So anything that we can do to keep transparency with industry would be greatly appreciated. And Doik Shishim, thank you for your time.
Thank you very much for your testimony this afternoon, Heather. That concludes who we have signed up in the room to testify. Is there anyone else in the room that wishes to testify? With that, we will go online here, and I think we're ready. I have Eric Clock, affiliation Ocean Ranger in Seward, interested in testifying. Mr. Clock, are you online?
Yes, I am.
We have 2 minutes. You have a 2 minutes to go, and proceed, please.
Okay, thank you. My name is Eric Clock. I live in Seward, originally from Cordova, Alaska. I've been a merchant mariner since 1978, mostly working on deep-sea tankers, freight ships, bulk carriers, also on cruise ships and the Alaska Marine Highway ships. I've worked as an Alaska Ocean Ranger off and on, as other duties allow, since 2009. I have a daughter and 2 sons who have worked in the maritime trades and commercial fishing. Having also been a commercial fisherman and sport fishing charter boat operator for many years, I know firsthand how ecologically sensitive and economically important our clean Alaska coastline and waters are. Alaska is a popular cruise and vacation destination, in large part for the amazing scenery, the clean environment, and abundant wildlife. Ocean Rangers on board the cruise ships provide valuable oversight to the cruise industry for the Alaska DEC and the U.S. Coast Guard. They also provide reassurance to the citizens who drafted and voted on the initiative in 2006 creating the program. The fishing, mining, oil and gas, and timber industries are also subjected to regulatory monitoring. The program is fully funded by a $4 per cruise ship passenger fee and does not affect Alaska's budget. For this and the other reasons stated, I believe that it needs to be kept in place. As the Ocean Rangers ride the cruise ships, we can monitor environmental, health, and safety regulation compliance when the ships are in remote and sensitive areas such as Glacier Bay, Hubbard Glacier, Prince William Sound, and the Alexander Archipelago. We watch for discharges to the air and water, and we observe the galley, food serving areas, deck and engine crews, and we're able to observe any safety concerns or unusual activity. I have personally seen and reported on oil in the water, excessive exhaust emissions. Pardon?
Time's up.
Sorry about that. Yeah.
I just have a couple more things.
Yeah, could you conclude your comments?
Sure, I just have a little bit more. I have personally seen and reported on oil in the water, excessive exhaust emissions, safety violations, and also getting too close to seal pups sitting on ice floes and seal calving areas. Most of those violations would not have been reported without having someone on board, independent of the cruise ship companies.
Great. Thank you very much. Thank you very much for your testimony.
I have a question because he's an ocean ranger.
We're going to try to roll through our testifiers here. Next, we have from Petersburg, we have out in the LIO, we have Nancy Berg. And
afternoon. This is Nancy Berg. Thank you for allowing me to testify. I've been involved with a working group here developing best tourism practices in Petersburg. And one of the most frequent comments that we get from our commercial fishing fleet when we're talking about tourism is the importance of having clean air and water for our fishing, commercial fishing activities. The Ocean Rangers program, has been stated, started with a citizens initiative. And according to Jeff Rogers, who spoke a little earlier, Governor Dunleavy has a sincere interest in reducing the regulatory footprint of state agencies and making it easier to do business throughout the state, including Southeast Alaska. I don't see that since 2006, when this program was funded and implemented, that there has been a reduction in cruise ship visits to Alaska. Quite the opposite. Just picking out a couple years, in 2011, we had 752,000 cruise ship visitors, and they're expecting that this year we'll have 1,310,000. I would think that a beautiful Alaska environment, both above and below the surface, would be an asset to the cruise line passengers. Additionally, John Binkley from Cruise Line Industry Association has stated that the industry hasn't asked for this to be repealed. So I think as seeing that there's no reduction in government spending involved in this proposal, that I would like to see it continue on. It seems like we have bigger fish to fry in our state government right now than to repeal this program. I'd like to see it continue on. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Berg, for your testimony. And we'll move now to Ron Bushman in Petersburg at the LIO. You online?
I'm online. I'm Ron Bushman, and good afternoon. Thank you for the work you do. I'm against repeal, and I think particularly with the increase in Alaska cruise line travel in the next couple of years, we should not overlook the deterrent effect of Ocean Rangers. It's an assurance to the people, particularly in Southeast Alaska, where we're having air pollution and other issues, that the pollution rules are being respected. And you have to wonder, why would a company take the risk? And the answer to that is Princess Cruise Line. It's a big cruise line in Alaska, Southeast particularly. In 2016, they were prosecuted by Department of Justice of the United States, fined $40 million for pollution violations, conspiracy, and obstruction of justice. Now, I've been a commercial fisherman for 40 years. We've had observers on board. Now we have maybe 15% coverage, and, you know, we're used to it. Keeps us honest, I guess. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony this afternoon. Let's see. So we now have someone signed in here from the Homer LIO, Jeff Hokkanen, H-O-K-K-A-N-E-N, in Homer. You're online, Mr. Hokkanen.
Hello,
proceed.
My name is Jeff Hokkanen, and I'm an Ocean Ranger. I live in the Homer area and have been a resident since 1981. I'm here to express my opposition to the governor's request to repeal the Ocean Ranger program. In 2006, I was one of the 82,000 Alaskan residents that voted yes to pass the ballot measure, to which, in part, created the Ocean Ranger program. This year will be the 12th season for the Ocean Ranger program. I believe the program has been successful at doing what the citizens of Alaska wanted when they passed that ballot measure in 2006. There have been thousands of observations and reports over the years. The Ocean Rangers have been able to supply ADEC with information they could only get by having rangers on the ships when they're operating underway. The governor states that the program provides limited benefits to the residents of the state. I disagree with him. One only needs to go to the Alaska DEC webpage to read how the years of reporting and observations made by Ocean Rangers are not only benefiting Alaskans, but also passengers and crew. I encourage all committee members and representatives to read the 2015 Ocean Ranger Assessment Report. The governor claims that repealing the program reduced state budgets by nearly $4 million each year. I thought the program was self-funded through the $4 fee being collected. I assume what he means is to continue collecting the fee and repealing the program and putting it into the general fund. It's unrealistic to think that you can get the same compliance monitoring as the governor suggests by department staff reviewing records and in-port inspections. Ocean Rangers are on board the vessels when they are underway in sensitive areas where no shore-based monitoring is taking place. I don't think repealing the Ocean Ranger program is a good choice for cutting spending. If the program is truly self-supporting through the fees collected, it should be considered as a revenue source to give Alaskans the opportunity for jobs. I urge all legislators to vote no on Senate Bill 70. Keeping the Ocean Ranger program operating in the Great Land makes good sense for the environment, health, and safety of its residents, and with a few changes, it can bring more opportunities for Alaskans. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony, Mr. Hokkanen. Appreciate that. Let's see. Next, we move to the Kenai LIO, and we have Daniel Lynch from Soldotna. Can you hear us, sir?
Good afternoon. Thank you very much. The new governor has made statements of his intent to give the state back to the people. A ballot initiative that passes is the people's intent. After oil and gas, our biggest active resource is tourism, but I don't see where the state receives any revenues to the state coffers. The state is open for business, but the shelves are empty. There is already enough people out of work. Increased unemployment does not help the economy, and I thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much for your testimony, sir. Okay. Next, we move off net. We have Tim Nellick from Galveston, Texas. If you're online, sir, please give your name for the record, and you have 2 minutes.
Good afternoon. My name is Tim Nellick. I've got a little bit of a delay in the video here, but if anyone is able to just raise a hand to acknowledge that you can hear me. I know I've got 2 minutes, so I'll try to be brief. I am an Ocean Ranger, and I apologize for calling in from Texas during my off seasons. I am an assistant professor of the practice in marine transportation. Thank you, sir. Thank you, Chairman Birch and the committee. Yes, so I'm online. I am typically verbose. I'll try not to be so today because I don't have enough time to be. And really, I think all I'd like to do at this point is echo the sentiments of my fellow Ocean Rangers and the testimony of the citizens who have come before you. I applaud their comments. I concur with them. I have read SB 70. I fundamentally disagree with FB 70 and almost everything that it says. I disagree with Commissioner Bruni and Mr. Sayer, say, from DEC. Most of what I would like to say has been said, maybe better than I can do it, but I would like to mention we as Ocean Rangers on board ships typically do not interact to very much extent with the passengers. Occasionally a passenger will see us in our uniforms and ask about our work. We're necessarily brief with our responses to passengers, but when we describe our work, we are typically met with substantial gratitude and appreciation. Alaska cruising is ecotourism, and I can tell you that every passenger that I've spoken to is more than happy to earmark whatever part of their cost of passage is dedicated to the Ocean Ranger program and our efforts to preserve the Alaska cruising environment. They're the ones that are making the investment, and I suggest to you that they think the investment is worth it. Standing by for any questions, and also thanking Senator Birch and the committee for an opportunity to speak to you today.
Thank you very much for your testimony, Mr. Nellick. Next, we move to Gershon Cohen in Haines. You there, Gershon?
Chairman, my name is Gershon Cohen, and I welcome this opportunity to testify on SB 70. I was one of the authors of the ballot measure in 2006 that created the Ocean Ranger program, which was passed by almost a 6% electoral margin. Every major cruise line visiting Alaska had been found guilty of multiple felonies for dumping numerous pollutants into Alaska waters, as well as in other U.S. jurisdictions. These were not accidents. They were purposeful acts, presumably to decrease operational costs. The ships were installing bypass pipes, often referred to as magic pipes, to circumvent required treatment systems and then submitting phony discharge logbooks to the Coast Guard. To address the industry's repeated illegal behavior, we conceived the OR program when we drafted the ballot measure to ensure Alaska waters and fisheries resources would be protected. The first few years, Ocean Ranger coverage was at about 90%. Unfortunately, the level of coverage has steadily declined, and I believe it was down to about 65% or less of the ships last year. Remarkably, in 2016, Princess Cruises, owned by Carnival, pled guilty once again to dumping contaminants in U.S. waters from several ships, again using magic pipes and other illegal bypasses to circumvent required pollution control equipment, as well as ordering ship workers to lie to U.S. authorities after the fact. As far as we know, this was not happening in Alaska, where ORs might be on board. Dumping was also documented off the U.K. coast in 2013. There can be little doubt it still occurs wherever they are not being watched by independent monitors, which I believe is everywhere except Alaska. The state should not scrap this program when it is so clearly needed, especially when it's paid for by the passengers and not the people of Alaska. It will lead to a lowering of the quality of Alaska waters and a degradation of the value and productivity of our fisheries, while aiding and abetting repeat felons who clearly care about only one thing, their own bottom line. Mr. Chairman, the point is not what equipment they have on board, it's whether they use it. And too often they have demonstrated that when not being watched, they will not use the equipment they have and will choose to pollute public waters. I urge you not to pass this bill out of committee. Thank you for taking my testimony today.
Thank you very much for your testimony this afternoon, Mr. Cohen. Next, we have Chris Schneider in Anchorage.
Yeah, hello. Can you hear me?
Yep, loud and clear.
Okay. So, yeah, my name is Chris Schneider. I'm born and raised in Alaska, in Anchorage, and I started shipping at 19 years old. Went on to become an officer, and then I've started the Ocean Ranger, doing the Ocean Ranger program in 2012. So if I go back next year, it'll be my eighth year. The previous talkers did pretty well. I would like to point out, I think I heard something about a guy say that, well, they would do an inspection on a treatment plant every 2 years, and they thought that was enough, which might be fine. But I guess what I'd like to point out is with shipping, it's different because the ship isn't just sitting there for 2 years for you to go check when you want. They know that once you get off, they can do whatever they want because you're not about to take a helicopter out to the ship. So it's a little different in that regard. And another thing I'd like to point out is the six violations. They use the six violations as a bad thing, like we haven't done much, but I think it's actually probably the other way around. A lot of the cruise operators, they know we're coming on board. They know what we're going to look at, and I think they just find it easier to make sure everything is the way it's supposed to be than to end up getting a bunch of violations. And also he says, oh, well, a lot of things were taken care of, you know, right away. And well, would they have been taken care of right away or pointed out if there wasn't an Ocean Ranger there to point it out? I guess would be something I doubt is the case. So that was kind of all I had to say. So if anyone has any questions.
Well, thank you very much for your testimony this afternoon, Mr. Schneider. I would note, if there's anyone that wishes to submit written testimony, that's always, as we mentioned at the outset, that's always well received, and that can be submitted to the committee at senate.resources@akledge.gov. That concludes the number of people that are signed up to testify online. Is there anyone else in the audience that wishes to testify? Seeing no one, the public hearing is closed. At this point, we will go ahead and set this bill aside with the intention of bringing it back up next week. I don't see anything further. I would just note that the next Resources Committee meeting will be held at 3:30 p.m. on Friday, March 15th, when we'll take up SB 51, Natural Resource Water Designation. Also want to take this opportunity to thank the Commissioner and his staff for being here, and also wanted to thank Captain Ed Page for joining us this afternoon as well. So, with that, the meeting is adjourned at 4:49 p.m.